Welcome to the QMEC podcast. I'm Ros Herbert.
And I'm Rini Paul.
This afternoon, I'm chatting with Dr. Amrita Sen Mukherjee, who is a GP and an occupational health physician and a wellness coach. Well, a coach and an expert in wellness. Is that right, Amrita?
Yes, essentially. I'm a coach in wellbeing, and I'm also studying a master's in applied positive psychology and coaching psychology. So that's where my interest in wellbeing really comes from, and where I'm really getting the theories behind wellbeing to support my interest in that field. Yes.
And we invited Amrita to come and do a podcast because we think we need it right now as QMEC teachers, as we're coming to sort of a different phase in the pandemic. Now, you've been coaching quite a number of doctors, haven't you, through this?
I have been, yes. I've been coaching some doctors, and I've had the fortune of actually being able to set up a voluntary wellbeing scheme for my local hospital. And what that has allowed me to do is actually be kind of standing side by side with doctors in secondary care and in primary care, and walking with them through their own challenges during this, and not just seeing my challenges but seeing the challenges of my friends and also of my colleagues. So I've been able to support those people who've been going through things in the primary care setting and in the secondary care setting as well, and really get a view of what people are experiencing. So it's been really a real privilege for me to be in this sphere, working in this sphere, and to be able to walk people through the journeys that they're going through at the moment.
I'm sure you've been in demand, haven't you?
I have, yes. It's been really, really busy. So I've been putting on some webinars, which have been really popular. I've been orchestrating some friendship circles, which essentially allow people to debrief and allow them just to have really personal conversations that they might not be able to do in the workspace. And also the one-to-one coaching. So it's not just me coaching. I do have some colleagues who are supporting me in the coaching as well. But yes, absolutely, people are seeing the need for it now. And I think it's hugely important just to give people that space for either catharsis or just to explore their own journey through this.
Yeah. Now, I fully appreciate we've all had different journeys through this, but what generally have you been noticing as you've spoken to people?
Oh, that's really interesting, Roz. I think what I've been noticing quite a lot of is people are feeling undervalued.
Yeah.
And people are feeling now, at this moment in time, that there is a sense of fatigue that's kind of setting in. And I think that fatigue was probably there pre-COVID, but then when COVID happened, we had to accelerate the way in which we were working. We had to really change the way in which we had utilised the workforce. And I think that really, that sense of adrenaline really fueled the workforce in terms of motivation, in terms of moving forward towards a plan where we were working towards a common goal. But I think now that things have settled, actually what's happening is that people are being able to have that space, that headspace where they can actually look back on the last 12 weeks and realise what they've actually dealt with. And now is the time when people are realising that actually they're feeling a bit tired, they're feeling a bit worn down. And quite often in primary care, we don't get the value that we deserve. And quite often the praise goes to the secondary care colleagues. Rightly so. I'm not saying they don't deserve the praise, but I think we in primary care also do need a lot of that, you know, that praise too. And I think quite often we get forgotten. I think that's what I'm seeing a lot of at the moment.
Yeah, and I think as doctors we're often trained to work on adrenaline, aren't we? A lot of our training is based around that, and we're actually quite good at that.
We are, yeah, absolutely, we are. We're very, very good at just dealing with the here and the now, because we have to, and we're really good at prioritising, multitasking. And it becomes essentially a life skill that we just develop, an innate skill that we just get used to dealing with. And I think because it becomes so innate, we forget how habitualized that skill is, and we forget the importance of it, and it becomes second nature to us. But actually, what I think is really important is actually taking a step back from it and acknowledging how brilliant that skill is, because what we do then is we celebrate our skills. And I don't think we do that enough in medicine. I don't think we celebrate our successes, because actually, if we go back in time and we look at what we've achieved in the last 12 weeks, you know, the mobilization of staff, the way in which telephone triage was changed, changed overnight, the way in which everything, protocols, I mean, the list goes on and on. We, you know, I could really go on for hours about how many changes there were. And the fact that that was all done by a workforce who were there, who were ready, who were able, hasn't really been celebrated. And I think that needs to be done. And I think we need to have the space to do that. But at the same time, it's like a coin. You need to have a look at the flip side of that as well. And you need to think, okay, absolutely, that needs to be celebrated. But we need to look at the other side of that and look at the impact that has had on people's emotions and people's psychological state as well. Because in that surge of adrenaline, our sympathetic nervous system gets heightened, our awareness mm-hmm. gets heightened, we get increased arousal. But unfortunately, that can lead to, you know, a sense of fatigue. It can lead to a sense of anxiety as well, because we're already in that heightened kind of flight or fright stage. And so how do we use that and come down from that stage in a healthy, controlled manner and use that energy in a positive sense? So I think that's really what we need to be discussing and how we can support people and framing themselves moving forward. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear what you've got to say. I recognise this in myself, and I recognise that in the crisis, I felt, okay, I feel at home here. This has been my training. I know what to do. And there was a crisis. But now, again, I don't know quite what to do with that, with all those feelings. So tell us more. Talk us through. I'm sure the listeners will identify with me.
I think we can all identify with that, Roz. I think that's the first step, to be honest. I think
the
first step is allowing yourself to be human and allowing yourself to understand that these emotions are completely normal. And I think in medicine, quite a lot of the way we think, because of the way we've been trained, is we have this black or white thinking. Oh, if mm-hmm. we think in a particular way, it means that we're not strong. And we label ourselves as being one or the other. And we really need to move away from that, because by labelling ourselves, we don't give ourselves the opportunity to just be who we are, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And I think what we need to start doing is actually giving ourselves that space to step back and recognise what's actually happening to us. So are you feeling more anxious? Are you feeling a bit more kind of heightened in your emotions? Are you losing a bit of interest in your job, or do you just want to get the day over and done with? Do you have an awareness of your own self and your emotions and what's going on? And it's really important not to just be reflective on what's happening to you, but be reflexive about it. So actually notice what's happening, but then have the courage to change it as well, and want to change it for the betterment of yourself and those around you. And I think equipping ourselves with the tools and the skills is really important. And I just want to go back to a point that I mentioned earlier about how as a workforce, we are so adaptable and we're so capable of change. And that has been reflected in the workforce in the last 12 weeks. And in that shows how resilient we are as a team, but also as individuals as well. And so I think we need to harbour that resilience and harbour those strengths and use those to move ourselves forward. And so actually, it's a multi-pronged approach looking at how we can support ourselves through this. And so I think the first step would actually be to grant yourself permission to feel the emotions mm-hmm. that you want to feel those that you're experiencing, and talk to yourself with compassion. There's a very well-known psychologist called Kristen Neff who talks about mm-hmm. self-compassion. She's done a lot of work around self-compassion, and she says that you should talk to yourself with love, like you would talk to your father, your brother, your sister, your mother, your child, and don't talk to yourself with that own critical inner voice that you might mm-hmm. have. And I think that's what we all need to try to start doing. We need to talk to ourselves with love, because when we do that and we offer ourselves love, we can offer those around us love too. And so that allows us to accept the emotions that we're feeling and say, actually, do you know what, I've had a really bad day, I'm feeling X, Y, and Z, okay, fine. And by doing that, that's the first step in processing what's going on around you. And then by processing that, you start to feel a bit more in control.
So sort of non-judgmental observation.
Absolutely.
Which is a skill I think we're all learning as doctors.
It is. And I think when we talk about these things, we talk about these things in well-being, in coaching, mm-hmm. in psychiatry, in general practice, in so many different arenas. And we talk about them so matter-of-factly, but what we really need to understand is these are huge skills that need time, development, and practice. And if we don't get it right the first time, that's okay as well, because we do need to develop the skills in doing it. It's like riding a bike. The first time you get on, you're going to be a bit wobbly, you're not going to do it that well, you're going to think, oh, okay, that was hard, didn't feel very good. but okay, I'll try again next time. And then 10 days later, you might cycle like a pro. And it's the same thing with your emotions. If you're not used to feeling them, the first couple of times, you know, you sit down and you think, oh, how am I feeling today? It can actually be quite uncomfortable. And therefore, when you go to do it, you don't really want to do it because you haven't done it before. So you have to become practiced in it. You have to become aware of actually moving through that discomfort to become connected with yourself.
Mm-hmm. A growing self-awareness, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, growing self-awareness and wanting to adapt and wanting to face challenges head on, because it's only through facing challenges that we can grow. And having a really versatile and flexible approach to the way we look at things. So I suppose having what we call a mental fitness is actually a really important way to helping us develop the tools to allow us to deal with whatever life throws at us. And that kind of fits in with what I was talking about being practiced in the skills. So if you actually develop those skills of self-compassion, of looking after your own well-being, of connecting with your thoughts and emotions and feelings and behaviours, actually what that allows you to do is that allows you to accept life for all the shades of grey in between the beautiful colours as well. Actually, we have to accept life for the challenges that we face and the beauty that is there as well too. And so I think that's really what I'm looking at the moment and researching at the moment, the kind of duality of life. And I think that's hugely important.
I think that's something that we're not necessarily good at embracing as doctors, because we like to be in control, don't we? And
we
weren't in control in any of the COVID, any of this last 12 weeks, but we might have fooled ourselves that we were slightly.
I hear you, Roz, and I think that resonates with so many different people that I've been talking to. I think in medicine, absolutely, we are trained to have the answers. And if we don't have the answers, we know exactly where to look for them. We know where we can find that paper. If we don't have a paper, we know who we can ask, or we've got a professor or a surgeon or a general practitioner or somebody in the field who might have come across that before. But with COVID, everything was new, and I think the pressure that put on us was, it wasn't just new in our professional lives, but it was new in our personal lives as well. And I think the difficulty that had was, generally speaking, if work is tough for us, we get to go home. Or if home is a bit difficult, because we all have our struggles from time to time, work can be a bit of a sanctuary. But I think what we were finding as healthcare practitioners is that when we went to work, it was tough. And when we were coming home, it was tough. So we had no sanctuary. And for a while, we couldn't even partake in physical activity. We couldn't go out of the house. We were on lockdown. And so there was just no release. And it was like a pressure cooker just building up. There was just nowhere for anyone to turn or nowhere for anyone to go. And so a lot of these emotions were just simmering away inside. And I think that's where a lot of this work was really so important, because actually by looking after our well-being, we're able to bank that psychological credit for not just the short term, but the longer term as well. And this is something I talk about quite a lot, about the difference between self-care and well-being, because I view well-being as a very individual concept to people. Well-being to me could mean something very different to you. Looking after ourselves, not just now in terms of our well-being, actually really holds us in good stead for the future. So when different crises were to happen, we have those toolkits available to us, our own individual fashion toolkits that we can use that can help us through these crises. And self-care for me is a little bit more like looking after ourselves in the here and now, so more of a short-term fix. So I think that's also where we need to be a bit more mindful of what is it that we're talking about when we're talking about well-being, and what is it that we're wanting to look after, because we could just bandy these phrases around and not really know what it is that we're wanting to look after, what is it that we're wanting to actually achieve by this. And I think by having a bit more terminology that we're more aware of can actually support us in figuring out what you're trying to achieve and what the outcome needs to be.
Yeah, so self-care we often think of as running a bubble bath, don't we, and watching a nice film and that sort of thing, but it's so much more than this, isn't it?
Yes.
It's long-term tools that we can keep using when the next trauma comes along, whatever that will be.
Absolutely. I think this is the reality that we all need to be aware of, that life is difficult. Life is beautiful, but life is difficult as well. And we need to have some mechanisms, some toolkits of our own that are individual to us that allow us to get through this. And there's some huge research, which I'm sure we all know as doctors, that was done by the New Economic Foundation in 2011 about the five ways to well-being, about connection, giving, physical activity, learning and awareness. And if we look after those five spokes, those five aspects, we are hugely on our way to working towards building resilience in the future and working towards building up some psychological credits that can help us in the future. And that doesn't just help us in the here and in the now, in the moment, but that also helps us move forward for difficult periods in time where we can look back and say, actually, I have these skills and I have these toolkits, so I don't need to rummage around and figure out how I'm going to get through this. I'm practiced at this, I've got these skills, and I can just get on with it. And I think that's where the analogy about the bike came in earlier, about how actually if we build up those skills when we're a bit more stable, when we're a bit more in control of what's happening, when it comes to a difficult period, we're ready to utilise that toolkit. And I think that's what's hugely important. And that's where our resilience comes in.
So, Amrita, what would you say to somebody who's coming to you then? They're coming for coaching and they're, after 12 weeks, they're tired. They do feel a bit burnt out. How would you say to them to sort of recognise their own toolkit or some tips on how to build up their own well-being?
Okay, so that's really interesting. So first of all, I would probably talk a little bit about resilience in terms of talking to them about their own resilience, because with coaching, it's not about the answers that I have, it's about their own answers, of course, and how they can discover their own journey. I suppose before I answer that question, if I could just talk about resilience a little bit, because I think that's hugely important here, because there are different ways in which we need to define this for people, because I think people need to understand that what, and again, like you were saying, life is a journey, we all have our own journeys, and resilience is the same type of concept, Roz. There are 122 different definitions of resilience.
Gosh, how can we be all of them?
Exactly. And so I think, again, we all just need to figure out what our own terminology means and what does that mean for us. And so we could be like a bamboo where we're able to withstand the wind but bounce back again, or we could be like a huge oak tree where we put our roots into the ground and we're able to withstand lots of huge storms that come our way and not be shaken by anything. Or there's another terminology in positive psychology where they call it reconfiguration, which is akin to a theory of post-traumatic growth, where we're completely changed by the event, we're completely changed by essentially the trauma, but we come back stronger, we come back more beautiful, we come back more learned, because the event has made us who we are, it's shaped us and it's moulded us. And I suppose it depends on what that person is talking to me about, because each of these different theories would really help them in terms of who they are and where their life journey is going, because how they see themselves and how they see how they have weathered the storm would really depend on how they move forward, if that makes sense. Because there's no point talking to somebody about post-traumatic growth or talking to them about how they could handle their new evolution if actually they don't see themselves as being changed through this time, right. if you see what I mean. Yeah. And so I think that's really important in terms of how we see our own selves and how we see our own vision of ourselves as being affected through this time. And so I suppose my top tips for people would be, one, to celebrate the successes. I think we're hugely, hugely trained and articulate in looking at what we might have not done so well. What did you not do so well and what could you do better? And I think that's the beauty of medicine, in terms of we're always on this cycle of improvement. But what that does do is it doesn't allow us to celebrate our successes. It doesn't allow us to praise the brilliance of our minds, of our creativity, and really appreciate our resilience and how really resourceful and adaptable we are. And so what I would want to do is focus on somebody's strengths and say, actually, look at what you have got, look at what you have brought to this situation and how you've brought yourself through it. So I would spend a lot of time focusing on somebody's strengths and allowing them to process those, and then maybe going through a few of those and then maybe sharing some of their difficulties, because again, life is like a coin. There are always two sides to any story, and sharing the difficulties to help them move through the emotion, because then only can we understand how those emotions have affected thoughts, feelings and behaviours. And then essentially, I would also want to support people in understanding that we don't have to be working at our full capacity all the time. And I think as medics, we, again, are trained in feeling that we always have to be our best. We always have to be working 100% of the time. And that's not humanly possible, actually. It's not humanly possible because we always have family circumstances, life circumstances, personal circumstances, work circumstances that are always affecting us. And so any one of those contributing factors are going to be having an impact on us. And that's okay. And as long as we're doing a job that's of a very good quality for our patients, of a very good quality for our students, of a very good quality for ourselves, that's okay. We don't have to be the best all the time. And I think if we can recognise in our own selves that we're not firing on full cylinders, that allows us to have the compassion to recognise that in other people.
Mm.
And if we can recognise that in other people, we start to behave differently towards people as well. And we start to cut others a bit of slack as well. Yeah. So if other people are having a bit of a difficult time, we can support them better as well, if that makes sense.
Completely.
By giving ourselves some support, we extend that hand to others.
Because everyone's been affected so differently by this, haven't they? I mean, I've had lots of colleagues bereaved, you know, who've then had to come back to work. That's been incredibly hard to watch them, you know, have to do that.
I empathise completely, Roz. I think that the trauma that's involved in that is huge, and my heart goes out to colleagues who are in those situations, and I really hope that they're able to get the support that they need in terms of if they feel that they need any psychological support or if they need support in their work environments. I really hope that their work environments are able to offer that helping hand in terms of a facilitated return to work as well, or maybe shielding them from particularly difficult cases or something like that, because I think we all need to be working in adaptable ways to support our colleagues at this time, because as you mentioned, we are all affected in different ways for one reason or another, and I think we just have to have that element of empathy, mm-hmm. not just extended to our patients, because of course we're hugely empathic to our patients, but we really need to start changing that culture, and we need to lead by example, we need to role model that, so we need to really start redefining the culture within which we work and really extend that empathy to our colleagues, and let them know that it's okay to not be okay, and let them know that actually if you're having a tough time, we're in it together.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I've really noticed GPs struggling with at the moment is we're really mourning the loss, I think, of seeing our patients. We miss them in a way, and none of us really like just doing telephone work.
No, and actually that's really interesting, because I feel that too, and I've also heard that a lot from people, not just yourself, Roz. And I think none of us went into general practice just to do telephone triage. It's akin to being, you know, like in a call centre or just doing one, you know, 1-1-1 shifts, which, unless that's something that you already have in your job plan and you already really enjoy, a lot of us don't really want to be doing that type of work all the time. It's okay for it to be a component. And I think the difficulty that people are facing with this is there's no end point at the moment. In medicine, we'd like to have end, in life, not just medicine, but we like to have end points. We like to know when something's going to stop, to finish, because when we know that, we can deal with it. But it's this dot 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 that we just don't have the energy and the resolve to deal with, and I think that's what's really playing into the fatigue as well at the moment. How is it that we can manage with not seeing our patients, with not having physical contact, with not being able to actually have that communication with people and just seeing a 2D version of people as opposed to the 3D, you know, person walking through our door? And I think that's hugely difficult. And it's been akin and been associated with grief, actually.
Yeah.
Mourning of the loss of a profession, actually. And how do we move ourselves through this professional crisis and muster up the pieces of a profession that we really want to hold on to, because we really need to have some thought and good processes in redefining how we're going to be moving forward through this to ease the stress, I think, because I think it's very stressful for people to understand how we're going to be manoeuvring through this crisis. So I think good leadership and open communication is essential.
And then almost acknowledge the grief.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. I think we need to acknowledge the grief. And I think that might be key to have team huddles and team communication about this, and how are you feeling about this? Because again, some people might actually be really enjoying this. Some people might actually be really enjoying it. And then
I know.
They might feel a bit embarrassed about saying, actually, I'm enjoying this. And so I think it's not to cast, it's absolutely to have this non-judgmental attitude about, actually, some people might be more drawn to it, some people might not be. So how can we manage that as a practice as well? So as we're moving through to a new era, could we have it such that one Doctor Who really likes the face-to-face contact does that? Could we have it that the Doctor Who's, you know, more attuned with the telephone consultations can be doing more of that? Not saying that they do that wholly, but, you know, just so that they're taking the larger proportion because it's something they enjoy. And I think having these flexible conversations about the way we work in general practice rather than a one-size-fits-all is really how we can manoeuvre through, because I think for a long time it's been this sessional approach, this one size fits all, this is how we do it in this surgery, rather than looking at individuals and looking at individual strengths and what an individual GP can bring to a practice. And so I think we have an opportunity here. We have a huge opportunity. And I think it would be a bit of a disservice to the creativity of our profession if we weren't going to use this in a fruitful, optimal way. And so I hope that we see some changes in the way in which we're practicing our wonderful profession, because there is huge change that could potentially be drawn from this very, very difficult situation that we've seen ourselves in.
No, absolutely. And I think we do see that, don't we, in our colleagues and in the way that we adapt and in our staff, our reception staff, our admin staff, who've been amazingly adaptive and need celebrating as well.
Absolutely, hugely. And I think it just goes back to my previous point about how resilient and how adaptable and how motivated our teams have been. And it just comes back to celebrating it, owning it, acknowledging it, verbalising it, communicating it. We are skilled in our profession at being communicators, but we communicate with our patients. We don't communicate with each other. And I think we need to bring that communication to a 360 approach as opposed to just, you know, going unilaterally towards the patients. And I'm not saying that's the way it is in every practice or in every group of GPs or anything like that, but I'm just saying we need to be more mindful of communicating the successes.
Now, I think I interrupted you earlier. You were talking about, we were doing about acknowledging your emotions, weren't we? Non-judgmental, self-compassion, ways of well-being, and then sort of rejuvenating. And I think you were going somewhere with that.
I was just going to say about in terms of looking after your own well-being and making sure that, again, well-being to me is a very interesting concept. So the way in which we define it is hugely variable depending on who you are, depending on your life journey, your upbringing, your culture. Lots of people bring spirituality into well-being, psychological health, emotional health, physical health, and depending on who you are, one of those components will be ranked higher. So I think in terms of the five spokes of well-being, one of those elements might mean more to somebody than the other, and so one person might focus on one of those aspects more than the others. And I just wanted to mention that that's okay. You don't have to embrace them all in equal quantities or equal aliquots. It's all about individuality and all about individualism. And it's just about learning what fits right for you, what feels right for you, and doing whatever you feel is important for you and your own family life and your own professional life as well. So I just wanted to emphasise the importance of an individual approach.
Absolutely. Just so our listeners can get some ideas, how do you look after your own well-being?
For me specifically, I have a routine that I like to keep to with regards to my spiritual health. So I pray and I meditate, and that keeps me connected with what I feel is important to me. So that keeps me connected to nature, that keeps me connected to God, and it keeps me connected to my ancestors who are no longer with us. So that's very, very important to me. For me, connection is very important, but not just connection with a spiritual being, but also connection with family and friends. So when we're allowed to have physical contact, I'm a very tactile person. So I'm somebody who will always, you know, with my friends be, you know, touching or hugging or that type of thing. So now I've had to adapt that in terms of I'll just send people messages or, you know, make sure that when I'm emailing, I've changed the way in which I connect with people. So I try to show gratitude in the emails that I send. I try to always send like a little positive note at the end. So especially even with people who I don't know, just because I think everybody needs that at this time. So for me, that helps me as well, because I feel that if I'm showing gratitude to other people, that's going to help them in their lives, and that for some reason makes me feel good about myself as well. So that's like a reverse altruism, essentially. And also for me, an awareness of my own emotions is huge. So I'm a coach, and part of that is we have to go to supervision. So I'm mm-hmm. very connected to my own self, my own psychological well-being and emotional well-being. But also I have a coach too. So I'm offered the opportunity to explore my life journey through coaching as well. And so that for me keeps me very grounded. I feel it does. I don't know what my husband would say, but if I feel it keeps me very grounded. And so for me, those are the two aspects that keep me on a straight path. So my connection with spirituality and my connection with my own emotions and psychological well-being.
And you've learned to do this.
Yes, I have, yes.
This is a process, isn't it? Yeah.
Huge process, yes, Roz. So my spirituality, I would say, is something that I learned throughout my childhood. I used to see my father meditate and practice these things. And I suppose for me, that was something that's become more habitualized because it was something that I've been brought up with. I didn't realize the importance of it. Since having children, since going through the journey of motherhood, I have really understood the importance of it. And that has really changed me. And so I'm glad that I had the skills and the process of learning how to do it as a child and as an adolescent and as a young adult, so that now that I'm a mother, I can kind of do it in 5 minutes. It's practice because I don't have the time anymore.
Mothers can do most things very quickly, can't we?
Exactly. But it keeps me grounded, and I really value those 5 minutes that I have. And in terms of my coaching, I have had a coach for about 2.5 years. And again, I was not very good at being a coachee in the first kind of 6 to 8 months. I had to learn how to be a coachee as well, because my mind was not in a growth mindset. As a doctor, I had been trained. So having a maths degree, hugely fixed mindset. And so for me to go through this period of allowing myself to reshape the way I think, reshape the way I view things, was hugely beneficial for me. So as you say, I absolutely want to acknowledge the fact that this was a huge process for me. This is a huge kind of step into the unknown, but very, very grateful for the journey that I've had and for the opportunities that I've had.
And what got you into well-being and coaching?
That's a really long story, Roz.
We may need to do another podcast.
I think so, yes. I think so. I've been really thinking about this recently, and it's not unidimensional. There are so many different facets to this. So I think we might have to save that for another time.
Yeah, we can save that. But I was listening to another podcast you did, and you were encouraging the listeners to look back at another difficult time in their life. And I thought I listened to you do that, and I did it myself, and I found it really helpful.
Oh, great.
Think of another trauma and what got you through and what you learned.
Yes.
And I looked back at a time when my son didn't have a school and we were going before educational tribunal panels. And I was thinking, okay, what really got me through then? And that was kind of when I discovered yoga. And that really helped me.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have discovered it otherwise. So ever since I listened to you do that, I've got back into yoga, and it's really helping me.
Oh, brilliant.
But I think we can encourage the listeners to do that, can't we? Because we've all been through traumas before, all of us.
Absolutely. And I think that's really important to acknowledge. And I think sometimes we minimise our trauma, and that's normal because we have to get through it.
Mm.
Sometimes we need to acknowledge trauma head on, and some of us cope with trauma by acknowledging it and putting it to the side. And that's fine. We all have our own ways, and there's no, and I want to specifically say there's no right or wrong way. So please don't think that, you know, if you haven't done something in a particular way, it's wrong. No, absolutely not. Everybody has their own way. But there's this great concept in positive psychology and in the scientific field called post-traumatic growth. And there's huge research done on this, which essentially says that when we have a struggle, sometimes that period of psychological distress can bring us through, can allow us to see an opportunity to give us the experience of growth. Essentially, what you were talking about, Roz, you learnt a new skill, you're able to use that hardship to manoeuvre your way out of a difficult situation. And if you hadn't have found that modality of yoga, it might have been more difficult. So our mind helps us use coping mechanisms. And so this is essentially what we're talking about. look at your life and look at a time when something was difficult. It doesn't have to be the most difficult thing that you've been through. And if it's a trauma that was very specifically painful for you, it's too painful, don't go back there. We don't want you to think about things that are too difficult for you if you don't have the support mechanisms to do that. But think of a time when there was something that was very difficult and you got through it and you're very proud of that achievement that you had. And consider what it was that got you through that. Was it your physical strength? Was it running? Was it abseiling? Whatever it is, like Roz said, yoga. Was it your psychological reserve? For me, meditation and praying. Was it your emotional reserve, your connection with friends, partners, parents, children? Or was it your ability to be in your own self and figure out what your own strengths are to get you through it? What was it that you had that was specific to you that got you through that? And by doing that, you redefine your strengths and you allow yourself to understand what your own specific strengths are and what your own specific values are. And we don't have enough time in our lives to do this because we're quite often in this phase of just get on and do it. Come on, I don't have enough time. We've just got to get through the difficulties. And that's where our sympathetic nervous system takes over in the flight or flight zone, which is what we're talking about earlier. So what I want you to do is go back to that point to understand your personal strength, your relationship with others, your appreciation of life, and see what it was that came out from there. Because by doing that, you can use those resources in any particular time in the future. But you've practiced them in the past and you can use them in a more mindful way, in a more productive way and in a conscious way. And hopefully that can allow you to pull on your own resilience reservoir, however you view resilience, however resilience has evolved in you. And that can allow you to pull through difficult times. And by doing that, we actually don't see those difficult times as such big hurdles. We see them as smaller little mounds to get over rather than big huge mountains. And that's how we learn and that's how we evolve and that's how we use our psychological credits to kind of get us through different traumas in our life, if you see what I mean.
You can almost look back and think, okay, difficult time's been here before, know what to do.
Yeah, and I think we recognise that by the mindset with which we come across things. Sometimes we think, oh God, not again. But other times we think, okay, I've done, you know, okay, fine, I can handle this. I know I've had it before, I can handle it again. So it's the mindset with which you approach things. And by having a more positive bias, you can change the way you view things. And I think it was Henry Ford who said, if you say you can't, you won't be able to. Whereas if you say you can, you're more than likely to be able to do something. So essentially having an I can mindset can really, really change that narrative in your mind, and it can change your mindset and it can shape the way in which you can view your own self and strengths.
So I think you've given our listeners lots to think about. If anyone's listening and they think, oh, I'd love to have a bit of coaching, where could they go? Can they come to you?
Yes, absolutely. They're most welcome to come to me. They could contact me at amrita@yourwellbeing.doctor. That's D-O-C-T-O-R. Or they could find me on Twitter @yourwellbeingdoctor. That's D-R. Or they could get in touch with me through you, I'm sure, Roz, if they wanted to.
Of course, of course.
But if they weren't keen on talking to me, there are lots of other different people out there. And there are also medics who coach, but also there are non-medics who coach as well. And I would ask people to consider looking a bit more widely.
I think we need to kind of prepare a little bit for when the students are back.
Sure. Yeah, I think so.
Acknowledge our feelings before they come back, because the students are going to have their own experiences, aren't they, when they come back?
That's right. And I think we all need to, in order to help others, we need to help ourselves. Yeah. And the first step in doing that is by actually taking an active process towards that.
So I'm wondering, Amrita, if you could come and do a workshop sometime for our teachers.
I'd be more than happy to. It'd be my absolute pleasure to be able to support.
I think that would be great, and we'll get that organized. So thank you so much. You've given us loads and loads to think about.
My pleasure. It's my absolute pleasure.